All right. At this time, could you help me welcome our speaker? It is Derek M. from Boston.
Hi, everyone. My name is Derek Moffitt, and I am a very grateful recovered alcoholic. My home group is the South Boston There Is a Solution group. We meet on Saturday nights from 7 to 8:15. We believe in the power of God and the steps, just like you. And if you're ever in the Boston area, please get my number after the meeting, and you can stay at my house, and we'll make a weekend of it, and have a good time. First and foremost, I need to thank Dave and Chase for going out of their way and making this possible. You know, through the power of God, miraculous things happen. And one of those things is that I actually get invited places today. And it's through God's children. And the hospitality has been incredible. And I'm truly grateful and humbled by your invitation. It's an honor to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an honor to do anything in life. When I first walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had nowhere to go. I had, you know, my family didn't really want anything to do with me anymore. I certainly didn't have many friends, and the friends I did have were only there for certain reasons. And that's just the way it went. I believe absolutely that my primary purpose tonight is to not tell you my story, but to carry a message of hope and recovery. So you may not hear what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I don't know what I'm going to say. It's up to God tonight. So if you don't like what I say, you can talk to your sponsor after and do some inventory, and you'll get closer to God anyways. So I don't know. Honestly, what I do is I step out of the way and let God take his course. The fact is that I'll just jump right into it, guys. I was miserable growing up. I had this spiritual malady that I didn't know what it was. You know, I had this internal disconnect from the world. I couldn't be, I never really had friends. I was like that short little runt in school with the loudest mouth, and I spent a lot of time in lockers. That's the way it went. You know, I mean, that's just my experience, guys. It doesn't have to be yours. But I found a solution to that when I was 12 years old. You know, on my 12th birthday, I smoked my first cigarette. Roughly 3 weeks later, I smoked my first joint. And about a month later, 2 months later, I got laid. And I was off. See you later. And I chased it to the bitter end. Like, that's just the way it was. At 12 years old, as soon as I smoked that first joint, and guys, I believe 100%, and women, I believe 100% in the singleness of purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. So from here on out, you'll hear me talk about drinking, drinking, drinking. And if you've done anything else, we can identify, because I've been there. But out of respect for the program, we're going to keep it to alcoholism, okay? So what happened is I smoked that first little joint. I got that first fix. And this, all of a sudden, I started to be able to get along with people. All of a sudden, I started having friends. I thought I could play soccer better. I thought I could play sports better. I was doing better in school, I thought. You can literally track my alcoholism through my GPA. It's kind of pathetic. And I just chased it. And I wanted to be done a long time before I was done. And there were many, many nights where I said, you know, it's not going to happen tonight. And by God, it happened, you know. And from at 16, I just got introduced to a whole nother world of alcoholism manifested in another way. And sorry, I saw the reflection and the thing looked like a pterodactyl. So at 16 years old, It's a Monday night, and I'm like, hey, let's go out. Let's have a good night, blah, 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 blah. I'm drinking Bacardi, whatever, with one of my friends we stole from his father. And have you guys ever seen these runt bikes that they have? Like, the tires are about this big, the frame's about this big, and if you're over 45 pounds, you shouldn't be on one. Well, I thought it was a good idea to take this thing through the town I grew up in. And now in my town, the only thing we have is cranberry bogs and alcoholics. That's it. It's a very boring town. You don't want to visit the town I grew up in. There's nothing there. And the fact is, it was a boring night, and I said, let's take this thing through the town. And what I did is I tried to jump the concrete barrier that the gas pumps sit on, and I missed the other side of it and cased it and went sliding across the parking lot on my face. So what happened was, well, I was drunk. I didn't really feel it at the time, guys. So what happened was I kept going throughout the night, having a good time, and I had passed out. And I woke up with this pillow scabbed to my face, right? So what happened is I jump in the shower, I peel my face off with the pillow in absolute agony, promising my mother with every ounce in my heart, with every truth in my soul, I'm done. It's done. It's over. I can't do it anymore. I'm 16 years old, swearing up and down to my family, I'm done. It's over. I can't go on like this. There had been many, many instances and many, many circumstances before that where I said, I need to be done. So I'm 16 years old, swearing up and down to my mother, promising her the world, saying it's not going to happen again. You know what I was doing that night, 6 o'clock? I was drunk. Why? Because step one tells me I have this inability to control it. I have this absolute inability. I've lost it's lack of power is my dilemma. It's not the fact that the girlfriend's not the right girlfriend or the parents suck or like whatever it is. Lack of power is my dilemma. It says the baffling feature of alcoholism, as we know it, is its inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. I was experiencing that for a long time. I needed to be done. I wanted to be done, and I just didn't know how not to be. And I chased it on and on and on, and multiple more stories. And, you know, my story is this: 3 suicide attempts, 3 detoxes, treatment centers, programs, long-term programs, aftercare, extensive therapy. Guys, I've done it. And I couldn't stay sober. My experience is that no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. I used human power for a long, long time trying to stay sober and seeking this thing called sobriety for a while. And I just couldn't get it. And I was wondering why you were sober for 25 years and I'm drunk. Because I'm doing what you're telling me to do. You know, I was 18 years old and I'm just backing up a little bit. I was 18 years old. I had just got caught drinking in high school. And now I don't know many normal people who drink in the morning to go to high school to get, you know, work done and do math problems and graduate. But that's how I got through the day. I needed that something in the morning. Whatever it was, I didn't care what it was. I needed that something in the morning to quiet the nerves and quiet the mind just enough where I could go to school and function. It only happened so long. They finally caught me. And, I woke up for a long time crying because I knew what was going to happen and I didn't know how not to do it, you know, and I didn't want to do it, but I knew that I needed to in order to get through that day. You see, the big book talks about that it ceased being a luxury and became a necessity. I was experiencing that. And it's the most painful place an alcoholic can be, is when the only solution we have, which is alcohol, stops working. The only solution I've ever had in my life, my king alcohol, stopped working. Now what do? Drink more. You know, like, no, I tried it, it didn't work. I'd pass out. So I'm 18 years old and I get caught drinking in school. And I've had enough. Like, I just can't go on anymore. I had tried suicide attempts, and they didn't work. And, you know, my mother had been sober about 17 or 18 years at that time. My stepfather, same thing, 17, 18 years. And I knew that you guys had the solution for me. I knew that you guys knew what I needed to do in order to sustain recovery. My parents were living examples of that. My stepfather and my mother were true examples of what this program can do in your life if you work the spiritual disciplines of it. Running successful companies and an RN and that she got her master's and she went into psych, and I mean now she has her PhD, and I mean she's a true inspiration in my life. But the fact is, I knew at that time that AA was the place for me, yet I didn't know how to get here. I didn't know what to do. So what was my only choice? It's midnight. I alcohol's not working for me. I just got caught drinking in school. And the only thing I can think of is checking out. But this time I know what I did before and I failed. So I know how I'm going to do it this time and succeed. And I lived on a main trucking route. And I said, the next truck that's coming my way, I'm going to end it. It's over. I can't do this anymore. And I see the lights bearing down Route 58, and I'm waiting, and I just feel this sense of ease and comfort because finally I can check out. There's no way this guy's not hitting me because I'm doing it at the last moment, and I'm committed. And I'm standing on the side of that road, and at the last minute I jump out, I put my hands in the air, I close my eyes, and I feel this gust of wind go past me. And now I'm just pissed. And I don't know what has happened. I'm like, did this guy just go through me? You know, like, this sucks. So it gets worse. You ready for this? The driver pulls over, and I'm standing on the side of the road, like my head in my hands, being like, how did I fail this one more time? And I'm thinking this guy's going to come up to me being like, are you okay? No, he cocks his fist back and decks me. And see, you laugh. I didn't think it was funny. And so this guy points his finger in my face and he said, kid, if I had hit you, you would have ruined my life. And it was the first time in a conscious thought I realized my alcoholism, my selfishness, and my self-centeredness was affecting every single person that came into contact with me. So now what am I going to do? Now I'm in a lower spot than I was before I jumped in front of the truck. I'll go to rehab. Detox, psych, and you try to commit suicide, they're not like, oh, you need a detox. They're like, psych ward, straitjacket, bye. So I did the little psych ward unit for a little stay, and they realized that I needed to detox. So I went to the detox. From the detox, I went to the 14-day program where I stayed 28 because I'm an exceller. And from there, I went to an aftercare program and an outpatient program, and I'm telling you this with all the honesty in my heart, with the absolute depths of my soul, I wanted sobriety. I needed sobriety, and I was willing to do whatever you people told me to do. I did the God charts. I did the higher power collages. I absolutely listed 455 triggers. You know, I mean, I did what these treatment centers were telling me to do. Was it good stuff? You bet. It occupied time. It kept my mind quiet. Did I learn a lot of stuff from those higher power collages and the trigger chart? Sure. Did it keep me sober? Absolutely not. And I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the most loving people I've ever met said, Derek, keep coming back. You know, meeting makers make it. One day at a time. And I believe they believed in those slogans. And today I think that those slogans can be used correctly. But my power cannot come from the slogans within Alcoholics Anonymous. The slogans are great. Don't misquote me. Please don't misquote me. The slogans have a purpose. When used as applied in what they mean. Don't take them out of context. Just for today. No, my big book says for good and all. What that means is I'm going to stay in this breath, in this moment, with you loving people, right with God. That's what that means. That means just for today, Every day is the day where we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. That's what that means. That doesn't mean, well, just for today, I'm not going to drink. There was none of that. I was done for good and all. And I did the whole deal of what they were telling me to do. And 4.5 months completely dry with no solution in my life. And now I believe these people were working the steps. I believe that these people had loving, great programs. But I was talking to Chase earlier about this. I was an 18-year-old, arrogant little pissant. And they just didn't know what to do with me. You know, no one knew how to sit down and say, listen, you little shit, shut up. We know you think you know everything. You don't. You know, everyone was too afraid to step on my toes. You know, no one wanted to hurt Derek Moffat's sensitive little feelings. And I went back out. And now I love those people because they taught me a lot. And I don't discredit my experience because those people are happy and they love their life and they're doing their deal and they're happy. I have no right to tell them they're doing it wrong if they're happy. It's like, the fact is that I went back out and I struggled for another 2.5 months. And I moved away. I moved to Burlington, Vermont on August 22nd, 2003. And on October 18th, 2003, I got that gift of desperation one more time. And I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor, who I didn't know was going to be my sponsor, said, kid, I'm sick of listening to you bitch about how pathetic you think your life is. If you don't want to suffer anymore, welcome. There's a program of action laid out in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that will solve all your problems. I was like, whoa. This guy's either full of shit or he's the most honest guy I've ever met. And what was I to do at that point? He then said, all you have to do is stand next to me, shoulder to shoulder, stand next to me down this path that's God-inspired, spiritually based, and involves helping others. What was I to do? I knew what the alternative was. I've done it before. I've done the God charts. I've done the higher power collages. I've listed my triggers. I've done it before, and I'm drunk. Let's try God for a minute. Maybe it'll work. I don't know. I said, I'm down. I'm suffering. You seem pretty happy in life. Sure. Maybe you got something. And we started this process. And we talked about the doctor's opinion, and we went through this book, and he didn't tell me his opinion. He didn't tell me his interpretation of what he thought it said. He told me exactly the clear-cut set of instructions. Completely opinionless. And if he did give me his opinion, he let me know before he was giving it that it was his opinion. And what happened was, I knew I was an alcoholic. That had been confirmed when I was 16 years old. You know, that was easy for me. He's like, are you powerless over alcohol? I'm like, check. Yep, moving on. He goes, do you believe you can stop given sufficient reason? I'm like, no, I tried that. Let's keep moving. And he kept hammering step one, making sure that I was really, really honest with myself. And that on page 30, where it talks about step one, I am conceding to my innermost self that I am a real alcoholic. Not the hard drinker, not the problem drinker, the real alcoholic. One that's only hope is a dependence upon God. Well, what am I to do faced with that alternative? If I'm the real alcoholic and I'm dying because of a spiritual malady, well, then I got to do something about the spiritual malady. And it's not a new pair of sneakers or a new girlfriend or a new house or a car. I can't fix the spiritual malady with an outside circumstance or materialistic possession. So he said, Derek, what we do here is now we're going to introduce ourselves to God. And I had been raised that Irish Catholic. I knew what I so-called knew what God was. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm really pissed at that, God. And he goes, well, we'll take care of the resentment in the fourth step. But you're in the third step, so you believe. He goes, you're in the second step, so you believe, right? I'm like, yeah, all right. So we get to step three, and he goes, Derek, can you do anything about the sun coming up or not coming up? And I go, no. He goes, can you do anything about the moon, of it, whether it's going to be full or that beautiful little sliver that it is tonight? I said, no. He goes, and I knew you grew up on the ocean. Can you do anything about the tide coming in and out? And I said, absolutely not. He goes, so then there's definitely some sort of power greater than yourself. And I said, absolutely. He goes, can you turn your thoughts and your actions? That's what will means. Thoughts and actions. Can you turn your thoughts and actions over to God? I said, I'll try. He goes, that's all that's needed. Let's rock. And now, at this time, I had one of the greatest third step experiences of my life. What he did is he said, we're going hiking. Now, if anyone knows me, I'm not a hiker. It's just not my forte. If you like hiking, rock on. God bless you. I like the idea of the outdoors. I like the idea of camping. I like the idea of hiking. I just don't like hiking. I have a fear of spiders that will absolutely... So if there's any behind me, just keep smiling. Don't tell me. Don't make me aware of it. Ignorance is bliss. And he said, we're going hiking. And I go, I don't even own boots. He goes, good, I have a pair that'll fit you. And I'm like, dude, I don't hike. Like, I grew up on cranberry bogs. We don't hike. We get drunk. And he's like, just shut up. And he's like, if you come hiking with me, I'll guarantee you stay sober. And I'm like, how is hiking have anything to do with sobriety? And he goes, because I guarantee you, while you're with me hiking, you won't drink. Well, let's go hiking. So we start this climb, and I'm miserable. And about halfway up, he's like, would you just appreciate the beauty? He's like, I don't care if you don't like it. He goes, but take a look around and appreciate the beauty of it. I said, all right. So I heard that pop, and I started appreciating what we were doing. And we got to the summit of this mountain, and now sometime in late December, early November. I don't remember the date, guys. I think it was early November. The foliage was still out, and I'm looking out at these beautiful Vermont mountains, these rolling mountains. And you're not going to tell me that God isn't real. And my sponsor took out this big book out of his back pocket. And we did a third step prayer on the summit of this mountain. God revealed himself to me that day. And I've never turned back since. I now know what my direction is in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there was no denying the presence of God in my life. And it was a much different conception of God than what I started out with. You know, for by now, it was beauty and love. And that's what I wanted my life to be, is just beauty and love. Because this man loved me so much to tell me the truth and to tell me the things that I didn't want to hear, that he was willing for me not to like him. And he did it in the most caring, loving way I've ever seen a human being do it. God was real. And I've never looked back. He then took an action that I needed to see. He laid out my fourth step direction, and I started writing. He then took an action where I needed to seek new sponsorship. We went back to step one. We did one, two, and three again. He outlined a fourth step and added some things that my other sponsor didn't. And this time it was clear-cut directions out of the big book. And I was balking, guys. Like, I was kind of taking my will back a little bit. And he's like, you have 3 days. 3 days a week, I forget what he said. He goes, you got till then. Finish it. And I knew I wasn't going to finish it. There was just no lying to myself. So I drove down. I was living in Burlington, Vermont at this time. I drove down to Bill Wilson's house in East Dorset, sat on the porch with the dog, and wrote my entire fourth step. Got there at 7 a.m. to watch the sun come up, and by 7 o'clock that night when the sun was setting, I finished my fourth step. That's launching. I should have did that however long ago it was before the balking period. You know, that day was an example of launching, not the a month and a half before, 2 months before. Like, if it took you 6 months to write your fourth step rock on, if it took you 10 years, I don't care. The fact is you wrote one. But let's not louse this thing up. Thank you, Dr. Bob, for that statement. It does not have to take you 6 months, 10 years, 20 years to write a fourth step. You already know the stuff you've done. You were there. Put it down on paper. It says this is a fact-finding, fact-facing process to discover and discard unsaleable goods. Wow. Chase, can you grab my agenda? That's God telling me to settle down. So, guys, like, I can't sit up here and apologize for my passion. This program saved my life. This program took me from a despairing wreck to a man that stands before you, a whole, peaceful, content man with the power of God. I cannot deny that in my life. I have been made happily, usefully whole in my life. I have a driven purpose that is absolutely undeniable. And I am not going to apologize in front of any one of God's children because we should all be on this path. And your path may look a little differently than mine. And mine may look a little differently than yours. But the fact is we are on this path together. This broad highway, shoulder to shoulder. It does not say that you're 20 feet ahead of me and the other person's 10 feet behind me. It says shoulder to shoulder, which means we're all equal too. You know, and I better be treating my brothers and sisters like you're equal to me and not less than. Do I treat that newcomer with the same love and tolerance that my sponsor showed me? Or do I judge them and make them feel less than and uncomfortable and not welcome? I hope we're making each and every newcomer welcome, feeling like this is the only home that they have to come to, feeling like they feel comfortable walking through the doors, receiving love. You know, I think this program should be a pep rally. People are like, you get way too excited. I'm like, you're not excited enough. Like, come on. You've been delivered from the greatest obsession in the world and been given the power to help others, yet you sit at home and watch Jersey Shore. Are you kidding me? Like, there is work to be done here, and there's not enough of us on the line. And you're my heroes, because I know what kind of group this is, and I know you're all in the trenches and you're all in the firing lines. Every single last one of you, right? So, we need them all. We need every last one of us commencing this journey. I hate this. Just because I'm in a suit before you does not mean anything. You know, it really does not mean anything. It just means that you're this group asked that you wear a shirt and tie. That's all that means. And the fact is that I respect Alcoholics Anonymous today. Because it's done such wonders in my life that it's absolutely no problem to do whatever you ask me to do. Because when I showed up, you were the only people left that took me in. You were the only people left out there who said, welcome home. I have to remember that you guys were the only ones who would put up with me. Coming into your meetings high. Coming into your meetings drunk. And you handed me a cup of coffee and you said, welcome, take a seat. You didn't say you're not welcome. We have to remember that in the early pioneering days of Alcoholics Anonymous, when there was only two groups, that there were more drunk alcoholics in the meetings than there were dry, than there were sober. You know, it's real easy for us to 12-step people today. All I have to do is go to a meeting down the street and there's tons of sickos. There's so many people to help. You know, the people who trudged it, the people who pioneered the path for me, made it so easy to do 12-step work. And I hear it a lot. I just can't find the new guy. I'm like, open your eyes. They're right in front of you. He's like, well, no one's asked me to sponsor them. Are you practicing the spiritual principles? Are you a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that people want something what they have? Or are you this judgmental prick with glaring character defects still? Trust me, I got my character defects, and Chase will tell you all about them. And freely, I'm sure. But the fact is that today I'm on a basis of trusting and relying upon God. And that doesn't mean that I'm freed from everything in my life and I live this superhuman existence. I have my problems. I experience life like you wouldn't believe. But the fact is that my attitude has changed to it today. It's a perceptional problem in my life. Like, it's not actually what's happening. It's my perception of what's happening. See, my problem is I try to fix the problem with the problem. The problem is my thinking mind. But when I can experience life with an awakened spirit, with love in my heart, I'm on a much, much better basis of life. You know, I'm going to be much more useful to you if I'm experiencing life with the awakened spirit rather than the thinking mind. Because if I approach you with the thinking mind, we're both screwed. Doesn't it talk about my little plans and designs for living? We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. And I know I'm a big book quoter and I thump this thing all over the place and I won't apologize for that either. And the only reason I do it is because this thing says it so beautifully and I'm the most verbal retard you've ever met. I just don't have the vocabulary to explain the spiritual awakening in my life. I just don't. It's something that I want to invite you to experience. If you don't know what I'm talking about and you don't know what the spiritual principles are, welcome. Join us. We'll be glad to show you. And you know what's going to be awesome is if you haven't experienced this, you're going to be the bright spot in my life. Watching your recovery is today the bright spot of my life. I've been freed from the bondage of self. I've experienced the promises in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I continue to experience the promises in Alcoholics Anonymous. But today, when I get to see my fellows grow, when I get to see my fellows smile, when I get to see my fellows' hearts open up to the world and start becoming loving, useful members of Alcoholics Anonymous, my life is fulfilled like you wouldn't believe. Like, how can I stay blind to this stuff and be like, yeah, life's all right. You know, the girlfriend this, the job that, the drive this, the whatever. I mean, we all got problems. You're having a human experience. I hope you have problems. Like, that's life. The normal people have problems too. It's real arrogant of me to walk into a meeting, and I did this for a long time, guys. I would walk into a meeting, puke all over the table, you'd be cleaning it up, and I'd walk out the door smiling, right up until the point where I wasn't. Because, and I heard this before, a problem shared is a problem cut in half. No, a problem shared is a problem bitched. Like, there's no solution in sharing a problem. The action after sharing that, the spiritual direction after sharing that, being free from it, telling God, another human being, and ourselves, is wonderful. But doesn't the book tell us that faith without works is dead? It means that there's action to be taken after I hold myself accountable to whoever I'm doing that with. That, yes, I need to talk about my problems. Speaking is therapeutic in nature. Of course it is. But unless I take the actions after that to make sure that now I'm back on the basis of trust in God, that I now am experiencing the sunlight of the Spirit again, what's the use? But yet I'd walk into your meetings all the time and expect you to clean up my stuff. Right up until the point where someone said, we are not your free therapy. Don't disrespect my meeting like that. We are here to talk about the power of God and the steps. And if you need to talk, come before the meeting. I'll sit down with you. Stay after the meeting. I'll stay with you. And we'll talk about that stuff all day long. But in the meeting, we're going to talk about the solution. In the meeting, we are going to talk about God and the steps. And guys, I'm willing 23 hours a day to sit down and talk about your problems. But for one hour, we're going to carry that hope to God. I mean, to the newcomer. We are going to carry the hope of God to that newcomer that they no longer have to suffer. That we know exactly what they've been through. That I myself have been there before and been freed from it. For all I'm asking is 1 hour a day. That's it. It's not a lot. 23 hours a day, we can talk about every problem you want. The dog, the cat, the husband, the lawnmower, the weed whacker. I don't care what it is, we'll talk about it. But in the meeting, let's carry some hope. And the hope is that through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, through the strict disciplines of 10, 11, and 12, I have been freed and been given this life that is indeed miraculous. It talks about being given a new life. And I don't intend on wasting that life. I didn't get my old crummy life back that I needed to piece together. I got a brand new life and a design for living with it. You know? And I can't waste it. I can't waste it. You know, I fall short a lot. And I ask God to remove those defects of character all the time. You know? Because the worst thing for me as an alcoholic is to be separated from you. And the only thing that'll separate me from you is my own personal desires and ambitions. And I'm in a really, really bad spot when that takes place. You see, what happened is I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that second time. And you loving people introduced me to my sponsor. And that loving sponsor introduced me to God on the steps. And God on the steps introduced me to this way of life, which is indeed miraculous, and then said, go help my children. That's the power of a meeting. The power of the meeting is that we meet our sponsors, and we hear some direction, and we may hear some things that challenge our own belief systems. You know, is it comfortable to be in a meeting where my belief systems are challenged? No! I want to murder the speaker. I'm like, who are you to call me out on my delusional thinking? I'm comfortable. You know, like, my delusional thinking is working for me right up until the point where it doesn't. And that's usually where I feel the pain. You know, I get this eye-awakening experience of like, wow, I really don't do that very well. You know, like, and thank God there's room to grow. Thank God there's room to grow. You know, I've heard people say, you know, well, I changed the person I brought in 10 years ago, 12 years ago. I tell you right here, right now, on October 11, 2010, I want to change the person I am now. Because I have a lot of growing to do. And I hope I never stop growing. See, the miraculous thing about this program is that you loving people call me out on my stuff. And you hold me spiritually accountable to that program of action. And when I get a little off track, I have people in my life to say, hey, Derek, come on, come back. You're getting too deep in the forest. Come back on the path. You know? They don't let me just go off and say, well, he'll do it when he's ready. I'm lost without you people. I need you people. Why? Because you people take me back to God. You people take me back to where God would have me be. You say, where's your quiet time? Absent. You know, like, usually when I'm not right or I feel some sort of disconnect from the world or I'm feeling some sort of dis-ease or discomfort, first thing I look at is my prayer meditative life. Absolute first thing. If that's in order, where's the resentment at? Where's the resentment? The fear is the evil and corroding thread. The resentment's the number one offender. Where is it? If it's not that, I'm gonna really sit silent and look for those character defects and let God show me what character defects are blocking me from Him and His children. You know, I have a beautiful girlfriend with a 3-year-old. I need to maintain fit spiritual condition at all times. you parents understand. You know, like, and I'm not the dad. So, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. A three-year-old will hold you accountable like you've never believed. You know, if you want some accountability in your life, stop babysitting. Because you can't be irritable, you can't be restless, and you can't be discontented around them. They're the purest form of the human existence. And they're shaped by their surroundings. So in my life, am I a loving, you know, our number one tradition. Peace. God's got a sense of humor tonight. Our number one tradition asks me, am I a healing, mending, integrative member of Alcoholics Anonymous? Or am I divisive? Am I taking this room and splitting it down the middle? And labeling one side and then labeling the other side? Labels are for cans. Leave them there. Not people. We hurt more people than anything else by labeling. Well, this one's contemporary AA, and this one's middle-of-the-road solution. They're a big book thumper. This one, he's just an evil son of a bitch. You know, like, I was in that group for a long time, guys, and then I went right around the circle. And I cannot divide the room any longer. I did it between my 2 years and a year and a half and probably 3.5, 4 years, you know, and I did a lot of harm by doing it. And I'm now cleaning up the past. There is nothing more humbling than making like public amends and then having a line of people to make amends to. Let me have done that for you, please. You don't need to experience that. It's not a comfortable place when people don't see you for who you are today, but judge you for who you used to be. Or who I used to be. You know, my actions is what gives you the power to say anything you want about me. My words will never do justice to what I do in this program, ever. You really want to know how I work my program? I'll give you my mother's number. If you really want to know how I work my program, I'll give you my girlfriend's number. You know, I will give you the people's number who see me on a daily basis. And they'll tell you how I work my program. Some days they'll tell you I'm the most loving, caring, kind person you'd ever want to meet. And other days they'd say you don't want to be around them. That's called being human. We have our days where we're on point, and you can't touch me. You know, I make a joke of it, but it's true. Like, I'm a little sunbeam for Jesus some days, and I'm like rocking out, and you can't touch me. And then there are other days where it's like, listen, you tornado, slow down. Where was your quiet time today? There was certainly, absolutely, positively no nightly review last night. You know, like, you are full of resentment from prior days. And in my experience, what I find is that I won't do inventory one night, right? I won't do my nightly review. So now I'm resentful. And then I carry that for about a week. And I haven't done nightly review another time. And I'll carry that resentment for another month. So now I got two resentments that have been following me that I haven't been doing my strict daily discipline on. And 3 months down the road, I'm wondering why I'm so batshit crazy. Like, it's because I didn't follow what I was supposed to do. You know, it really is not comfortable when it says that all problems arise out of self. It means I can't blame you for anything. But thank God for that, because if you were my problem, I can't do anything about it. I can't change you with all the power in my heart. I can't do a damn thing about what you do. But see, if it's my selfishness, I can ask God to remove that. I can ask Him to take me towards better things. And you know what? He does. He does take me towards better things. You know, like, the power of God is miraculous. And I can't ever talk about the power of God enough. We are a spiritual program of action. We are not a spiritual part. You know, there is no spiritual part. This program is operated and functioned by 36 spiritual principles. We have the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts. And then we have the 6 warranties of concept 12. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's time to get active in service. And every one of us should be accountable to service. Because we all have a job to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of work to be done. And I'm not going to stand on the firing and stand on the sidelines and go, wow, what they have looks pretty good. But I just can't do that. You know, that's a false statement. Any one of us can do anything we put our mind to with the power of God. You know, I have a purpose in life, and my purpose in life may look a little differently than your purpose in life. But the fact is that God has a plan for each and every one of us tonight. What I'd ask everyone in this room is, are you quiet enough to hear the direction? I didn't start seeking the direction because my head was clouded with self and in these delusional thoughts, and that, like, my mind was going 24 hours an hour, like 24 hours a day. I heard the direction when I got silent. I heard the direction, and I heard the inspiration when I'm silent. God's trying to tell us something right here, right now, in this breath, in this moment. He's telling us something. Can you hear it? I can. There are days I can't. Today I can. And once again, thank God for you loving people. The people who hold me accountable and say, are you listening to God? Have you listened to God today? Do you truly know what you're supposed to be doing today, Derek? And sometimes my answer is nope. And a lot of the times it's yeah. It's through complete self-sacrifice that all things are possible. It's not convenient to drive 6 hours to Quakertown. Which, by the way, I've been pronouncing Quackertown. And it happens. It's not convenient. I'll tell you that right now. I got a girlfriend at home. I got 2 jobs. I'm very busy. It's not convenient. But it's what God wants me to do. And you know how I know it's what God wants me to do? Because Dave said, hey, listen, we have a meeting down in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, and we'd love to have you. And you know what? God works through His children. And the only way I can see God's children, the only way I can see God is when I see your face. Every time I see one of your faces, I see the face of God. You know, I can't judge you. I can't hate you. I can't afford to even not like you. I may not want to be a part of your life for certain reasons, but that doesn't mean I don't like you. It just means that we have 2 different paths. It means, let's be honest, guys, not all of us are going to like each other. Personalities clash. And the traditions tell me that the greatest personality in this room right here, right now, the biggest personality out of all of us, is mine. And when I overcome my personality, I can look each and every one of you in the face. And those fears fall from me. Because for when I get over my personality, I'm not judging you. That I'm one with my brothers and sisters. That we all together commence this journey shoulder to shoulder. You know, I'll end with this, and it's because one of my favorite speakers does it from the podium, and I think it just summarizes it so great. And feel free to get active and play along with this. How many of us drank and drugged when we lived in a beautiful, beautiful house? How about on a park bench? How about when we had a ton of money in our pockets? No money, spanging in front of a Wawa. I just wanted to say it. How about when we were, you know, had the loving, caring family in our life? No one wanted to be around us. Here's the kicker. You ready for this one? Dating the most beautiful girl or the drop-dead gorgeous guy you've ever seen in your life. Your hand went up way too quick. How about dating Satan's sister? So why are we going to come in here and talk about why we drink? Obviously, I drink under any and all circumstances. Obviously, I drink whether I want to or whether I don't want to. Just because your drinking looks differently than my drinking or my drinking looks differently than your drinking doesn't mean jack shit. It means that our experiences are different. What we need to get down to, what I need to get down to is the inside soul of it. Not what happened to me drinking, but what drinking did to me. It fixed me for a long, long time and left me empty and broken. And you guys, you loving people, once again, showed me a way of life that I'll never be able to pay back. Never, ever will I be able to pay back what you people have shown me. It's a journey you shall not miss. You know, and I invite every one of you to experience this journey. And don't try to be better than anyone, because really you're just in a group of drunks, and it means you're trying to be more of a jackass than the jackass. You know, we have to remember where we are. We're in AA. It's like, I want to be King AA. Everyone else is like, I don't want to screw up. I don't want to do this. I'm like, well, I jumped off of a, you know, like, trying to outdo each other. It's ridiculous. Our egos are pathetic. It's an absolute honor to be a part of such a tremendous program. And I am a tiny, tiny little piece of a gigantic, beautiful whole. And it's because you people invited me. It's because the loving people in my life who now trust me invite me into their lives. And the only people I have to credit that to is the people and the members of Alcoholics Anonymous who cared more about me than my sensitive little feelings and told me the truth. So I tell you the truth tonight, that welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Your life is about to change beyond your wildest dreams. Don't shortchange yourself and join us on this broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. God bless. Thank you.